Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy. And co-host Mike Betts is here as keeper of the Prairie Winds Farm. How are you this fine day, Mike?
I'm feeling pretty good today, Pat. You know, yesterday the Canada geese and a number of swans were out in the field next to our prairie. And I talked with Wolf Osterreich, and he says currently there are 129 adults and 50 immatures at Ada Hayden.
50?
50. So I think folks need to get out there this weekend.
Oh, love seeing the swans in flight. That's a lot to look forward to. Hey, there's a lot to learn about on this local talk for Friday, December 30th, 2022.
And it's currently the last Friday, and it's 27 degrees out there with a high of 37 forecast for today. Winds will be out of the west-northwest at 4 to 8 miles per hour, and there'll be low clouds today. Highs will be in the 40s forecast for the weekend. Woohoo! And the 40s on into the first part of the year of 2023.
Our sunrise will be at 7:42 a.m. and sunset this evening at 4:52, with a waxing quarter moon. Hey, later in the hour, we're going to hear from Justin Clausen about our recent storm and how it compares with other storms. Yeah, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a summary of the news this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The aftermath of that blizzard in Iowa, and what Iowa's Republican majority in the state legislature might try to do next year. All part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday's paper, which reported that about 4.5 inches of snow had fallen in Ames since Wednesday. Winds had picked up on Thursday, causing bitterly low temperatures with wind chills reaching at least 37 degrees below zero. The State Department of Transportation and the Iowa State Patrol advised against traveling. At the Des Moines Airport, flights were canceled, many of them by Southwest Airlines, which underwent a system-wide meltdown as a result of the storms. The federal government said it planned to investigate what went wrong at Southwest. The Trib also reported that the first student representatives had been appointed to the Ames School Board. William Geisler and Ratika Tapeta are both juniors at Ames High and were chosen to join the 7 school board members who are elected to their seats. The students will not have voting rights like the elected members, but they do get to share their insights and raise issues at school board meetings. And the Trib reported that Wells Fargo had agreed to pay nearly $4 billion to settle charges that had harmed consumers by charging illegal fees and interest on auto loans and mortgages, as well as incorrectly applying overdraft fees against savings and checking accounts. The U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau ordered Wells Fargo to repay nearly $2 billion to consumers and also enacted a nearly $2 billion penalty against the San Francisco-based bank, which has its mortgage division in West Des Moines and is the metro's biggest private employer. Saturday's paper reported that a significant stretch of a northwest Iowa river has run dry several times in the past 7 years as a rural water utility has pumped more water from the ground, at least a quarter of which is sold out of state, with the approval of federal regulators. The 2-mile segment of the Ocheyedan River dried up this past September during the drought and with increased pumping by Osceola County and the Osceola County Rural Water System. That led to the deaths of an undetermined large number of fish and other aquatic life, diminished wildlife in the area, and left less water for local livestock. And because last Saturday was Christmas Eve, half the Tribune's front page was taken over by a large drawing of Santa and his sleigh and his reindeer flying in front of a full moon, with the legendary Clement Clark Moore poem, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," printed underneath. You know that one. "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse." Last Sunday's paper, on Christmas Day, reported that development in Ames, Nevada, and Boone is showing no signs of slowing down in the coming year. In Ames, developers hope to break ground on the first phase of a big project on Lincoln Way between Kellogg and Clark that will turn the area into one with shopping, dining, a hotel, and apartments. The first phase would include a 100-room boutique hotel and conference center, a mixed-use building on Kellogg with more than 14,000 square feet of retail space and up to 130 apartment units, and an open-air commercial plaza at the center. If work starts next year, the first phase would be finished by the fall of 2025. But that's not all Ames has going, not by any means. Lots of planning work for the new $34 million Ames Aquatic Center will take place next year. The city will take possession of the land needed for the Aquatic Center at 122 North Oak on January 5th. Demolition of existing buildings on the property will take place in 2024, and the Aquatic Center is expected to open in the fall of 2025. And then there's the Plaza, being built now across the street from City Hall on Clark Avenue. It's named for Ames City Manager Steve Schenker, and it's expected to be finished in June. In Nevada, new housing developments will continue through the planning and building stages next year. That includes Oak Park Estates on 6th Street just north of U.S. Highway 30. It includes 27 acres of rolling green hills and forests that were once home to the Oak Park Academy, which was torn down last year. Single-family homes and maybe duplexes will be built there. And construction is planned on a new subdivision in the northwest corner of Nevada. In Boone, work continues on a housing development at 22nd and Lynn Streets. And the city plans to pave and install new utility infrastructure on West Park Avenue and South Marion Street. And southwest of Cambridge, work will continue on the new YSS Youth Recovery Campus. It will feature a 70-bed facility offering Iowa youth emergency shelter, crisis stabilization, and addiction treatment. It's expected to open in 2024. And the Trib had a heartwarming Christmas story about how a chance meeting helped fulfill a Des Moines mom's Christmas wish. It's complicated to tell here, but it's a fine Christmas read in last Sunday's paper. Tuesday's paper reported that Iowa's two Republican U.S. senators had voted against the nearly $2 trillion spending package that passed overwhelmingly in the Senate. That bill includes record amounts for domestic programs and defense priorities, as well as $45 billion for Ukraine, as lawmakers scrambled to approve the measure before a government shutdown. The Senate's vote was 68-29 in favor. 18 Republican senators joined all 50 Democrats to vote in favor. But Iowa's Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst voted no. Ernst said the spending package shows that, in her words, Washington's budget process is completely broken. Grassley said he voted against the bill because it was, in his words, bogged down with pork as Americans continue to struggle with rising prices. Then last Friday, the U.S. House passed that bill on a 225-201 vote. 9 Republicans joined Democrats in approving the bill. Iowa's 4 congressional members split along party lines, with Democrat Cindy Axne voting in favor and all 3 Republican congressional members voting no. And the Trib reported on an Iowa woman who is carrying her 3rd surrogate pregnancy. A surrogate is someone who agrees to carry and deliver a baby for another person or couple. Ashley Green says she became a surrogate in order to help others grow their families. She has 3 children of her own. Wednesday's paper reported on the issues that Iowa Republican lawmakers likely would take up in the upcoming legislative session in Des Moines. The GOP will hold a 64-36 majority in the State House and a 34-16 majority in the Senate. Among the issues that likely will be on their agenda, Governor Reynolds' school choice proposal, which the Des Moines Register says will dominate the debate. The governor first unveiled her plan in 2021, a plan that would let parents use a state-funded scholarship program to send their kids to private schools. The second issue the GOP likely will undertake is to lower property taxes. Lawmakers have passed several rounds of tax cuts in recent years. Another issue is abortion, with the Register saying any new legislative abortion restrictions in Iowa will likely wait on a court ruling. Abortion remains legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. A fourth issue in the state legislature next year is the possibility of new gun laws. In 2022, Iowans voted to add the right to keep and bear arms in the state constitution. That does not grant any new power to lawmakers, but some key leaders say they're looking at new gun rights bills in the upcoming session. And the fifth issue that is likely to show up in the legislature is tort reform, with Governor Reynolds perhaps trying again to limit damages in medical malpractice and in commercial vehicle lawsuits. And the Trib also reported that a bank based in Utah will have to repay more than 1,600 people for violating Iowa state law. The Transportation Alliance Bank of Ogden, Utah, is accused of issuing loans to Iowans that carried exorbitant interest rates. State Attorney General Tom Miller is alleging that the bank issued 1,611 loans to Iowans between March 2020 and April of this year, some of which carried interest rates as high as 188%. Yesterday's Trib had some advice for travelers who have been stranded at airports across the nation, as airlines, especially Southwest Airlines, try to rebook flights messed up by the massive storm that swept the nation. The paper reported that if travelers still wanted to get to their destinations, most airlines would rebook them for free on the next available flight, as long as it had seats. Travelers are also eligible for a refund, not just vouchers for future travel. Major airlines were waiving change fees. Airlines are not required to put anyone on another airline's flight, but they can, and sometimes do. Airlines are not required to give standard travelers a hotel room or compensation, but many do. And while it's impossible to predict future storms or jam-ups, experts say non-stop flights and morning flights are generally the most reliable. And the Trib had word on how newly elected State Attorney General Brenna Byrd is planning to change the way her office operates compared with how the man she defeated, Tom Miller, ran it. It's a long read, and it's in yesterday's paper. And that is your summary of the past week's news from the Ames Tribune. And this is my final newscast of 2022 here on KHOI. Again this year, this newscast has been sort of a traveling roadshow. It's originated from such diverse places as Disney World in Orlando, Florida, during a hurricane, from Oklahoma City, from Flagstaff, Arizona, from Three Forks, Montana, from Clovis, California, from Madera, California, and, of course, from Ames. No matter where we've come from, the goal has always been to provide you with the clearest look possible at what makes news both here in Ames and all across Iowa. I hope we've had some success with that. I'm taking the weekend off now to celebrate the start of a new year, 2023, which will also mark the start of my 7th year of producing these Monday and Friday newscasts. And yes, this coming Monday, January 2nd, 2023, I'll be here on Local Talk with word on what makes news in the last week of 2022, all around Iowa. I hope you'll be here as well. Between now and then, Happy New Year, everyone, and go ahead. Have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your summary of the week's news in the Ames Tribune. And the music you heard was Round Dance by Robert Tree Cody on the White Buffalo CD.
Since 2005, a memorial horseback ride has departed from Brule, South Dakota, near Fort Thompson on December 10th, and traversed snowy terrain to Mankato, Minnesota, arriving December 26th. The 330-mile, 17-day annual Dakota 38+2 Memorial Ride wrote its own history to reconcile with the Mankato, Minnesota's tragic history. At 10 a.m. on December 26, 1862, 38 Dakota men and two others later were publicly executed in downtown Mankato. Their crimes centered around an uprising that occurred to get food from warehouses for starving people. Upwards of 3,000, or the remainder of a once proud nation, were forced to march to South Dakota, which was a territory at the time. Or women and children were loaded onto steamboats and transported down the Mississippi, then up the Missouri River to Fort Thompson, South Dakota. Through all kinds of weather extremes like this year, the riders have persevered and completed the ride. Let's hear from one of the key organizers of the ride, Jim Hallam, from Santee, Nebraska.
Welcome to Local Talk.
My name is Jim Hallam. That's my Wasuchu name. My Dakota name is Weakekoaka Wachasha Padewakantawana Wakpekute. Of the Dakota Nation. I live in Santee, Nebraska.
And you're on the Dakota 38+2 Memorial Ride.
Yes, I am.
And when did this start?
The 10th of this month, the 10th of December.
And this is the 17th year?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I don't count.
Okay.
Years.
Okay. But you've been on the trail.
Yeah, I've been on the trail a lot of years.
And we're currently in Mankato.
Yeah, Mankato. Oh. Yeah, Mankato. Yeah. I mean that's the name they call it, Mankato, because at the end it was Mankato. That means blue earth. Uh-huh. Blue earth is a place.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about your ride. How many horses, approximately?
On the ride right now? Well, we have 25 here, and I'm guessing maybe 30 at the other location, maybe more. We brought ours down here to the park because we wanted to them to be with us, because we decided to stay in the park and camp out, you know, to give of ourselves to give something back for what they did. You know, it's a little discomfort, a little pain. You know, we're going to sleep in the teepees. You know, it's not the... we don't have teepees from long ago with buffalo hides and stuff. We have canvas. They're not as warm, you know, and they're not as airtight. And, it's going to be a little... It's bearable. That's what I can say. Yeah. We have a fire inside. And
yeah. I think it's 11 degrees.
Yeah.
Well, what compels you to do this sort of memorial?
Well, you know, when we were younger, when a lot of people, you know, a lot of us were younger, none of us knew these stories. None of us knew these stories of what happened to the people. They call this the Dakota Uprising. That's what it's called in the history books. But it doesn't explain nothing of what happened. It just says it was the Dakota Uprising. It doesn't even tell who they were. And that's it. And there's nothing in the history books about who we were, who we are, why this so-called uprising. And you can't even call it an uprising, because it was actually a war of survival, because our people were starving. And there was a lot of fraud by traitors. It was real bad. And that's not in the books. That's not in the history books.
We're in the city of Makoto, Minnesota. 38 Native people were hung on the day after Christmas in 1862.
Yeah, that'll be tomorrow. Tomorrow we ride to the site. Today we're in the Land of Memories Park. We're in the city, though, of where it happened. And tomorrow we want to go again to honor them, remember them, and then bring this awareness to this atrocity that happened because of things that happened to us, you know, happened to our people. Just, you know, I shared with you earlier about what happened, you know. I mean, there was people died. I mean, there was treaties made for lands. And a lot of times our people couldn't even understand because they didn't speak English. They didn't understand what was being said. And there was promises made, and those promises weren't fulfilled. When the people would go get their promises, they would give those to the traders, because the people had to charge. Otherwise, they were starving, because we were at the very end. We was along this narrow strip along the Minnesota River, and people were starving. The people were starving, and there was atrocities even there that's not in the history books, of neighboring men assaulting our women when they would go out and try to gather in that, on that narrow strip along the Minnesota River. And there was, who do you go to? When we weren't even considered human beings back then, because it wasn't until the Standing Bear trial that we were considered human beings. We were less than.
Let's make a mental note and discuss the Standing Bear trial another time. But that seems to be very, very significant. But in some of the research, and there's not a lot in the history, as you say, more and more all the time, but there was a quote of, "Let them eat grass."
Well, that right there is what I was going to talk about. When the people went to get their annuities or their promises, they had a warehouse full of food. He wouldn't release it. His name was Andrew Myrick. He wouldn't release that food. And he this was his quote: if they're hungry, let them eat dung or let them eat grass, you know. And when they found him after that started, his mouth was stuffed with grass. But they also failed to mention something else. Other times when they went to go get their promises, and that's that food and whatever, people starved waiting. That's not in the books. They starved waiting. waiting. They died there. People died while they were waiting for that food because they were starving, because there was nothing left. They were surrounded, and they, like I said, even those resources, that little resources they had was being taken, like the wood along their that strip. They would come in and take that. They would hunt in there, and you know, they wasn't supposed to do that. And then in the end, they were even illegal squatters on that land, and they asked Abraham Lincoln for protection. That was right before this started. So that kind of justified the actions of what happened.
And as a result of the uprising, apparently 38 were convicted, sentenced to hang, and it was carried out the day after Christmas,
yes,
1862.
Yep, at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock in the morning.
And what are your plans for December 26, 2022?
Well, tomorrow, that is tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, we'll get ready. We'll saddle up every horse we got. We'll use every horse we have. And I plan, I brought children with me. I brought children with me, trying to teach them about this. But I brought children with me, and I'm going to let them ride. If we don't have enough horses, I'm going to let them ride, because this is something for them. They're our future. You know, they need to learn. They need to learn about what really happened to our people. Our story of, you know, what really happened, not that history book of the, we call it whitewash history, because that's what it is. And it's not, none of our story. And there's so much to it, you know.
You're involving the next generation.
Yes.
The story will continue now.
Yes. You know, this ride is supposed to end this year. It's supposed to be the last year. 2 years ago, we did a ride. We came up from Santee. We call it the exile ride, because nobody knows that it's still in the law book that we can't come back. That's still in the law book in Minnesota, that we're still technically, that's why we called it the Dakota exile ride, because we're in the law book, we're still exiles. We can't come back.
As Native Americans,
yep,
you were exiled away from, yep, your land in Minnesota, forced west to Santee.
Yep. Crow Creek at first.
Oh, Crow Creek.
Yep, Crow Creek, and then to Santee.
Thank you so much for the corrections. You're very, mm-hmm, I've learned Makato.
Yeah, Makato.
There's much to learn.
Yeah.
If there's one more thing, or if there's, what is it that is important in your heart at this time?
That we continue on. We continue on spreading this awareness. Telling our story, you know. I mean, November is supposed to be Native Heritage Month. We should be teaching in the schools. We should be teaching, going into the schools, telling our story of what really happened. And it's not happening, but it needs to happen. We need to share our story. We're even talking about making and putting our stories together in a book and sharing that with the schools and see if they would teach it. You know, because all the things that our people went through before the so-called uprising. Remember, I call it the War of Survival because we were starving, to the aftermath, and that's Crow Creek, Santee. I mean, everything that happened afterwards, and it's horrible. There's so much more to the story, so much suffering, so much. And today we suffer from addictions. We suffer from dysfunctional homes. Today we suffer from alcoholism, depression. We have high suicide rates, and we have a very low life expectancy. When at one time, we had none of that. We didn't have none of those problems, but we do today because of what was taken away from us.
One thing I noticed in the ceremony that was just completed, and a beautiful meal, my goodness, it was overflowing. What the meal was fantastic. But I noticed a sense of humility, a lack of revenge. It seemed like it was important that this is conducted with respect, humility, and not to forget, but mm-hmm, to reinforce the best of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like I witnessed the best of humanity at a time when you were memorializing atrocities that were the darkest days a people could ever encounter.
Yeah. Yep, you know, I always say, you know, and my motto is forgive but never forget, because we're always scared history could repeat itself. We never know. I mean, could this happen again? With what little we have left, could it happen again? I mean, you know, the odds of that happening are like 1,000,000 to 1, but it could happen. That's the scary part.
Is that where you'd like to leave this?
Yeah, I think it would. You know, this could go on so far. I could go so far. I could share.
I certainly am privileged and honored that you had took some time to share your insights into a very important activity that you've been involved with in the last 17 days. My goodness.
Yeah.
It's been a winter's ride.
Oh, yeah. This year has been a good one. You know, below, way 10, 14 below winds. But we've done it. And, you know, I've seen the young people, the young ones, not a complaint out of them, just doing it, you know. They do it. They see us doing it. We have to live by example. We have to be those examples. We have to show them how to live. And that was something we had before. And I could go on about the aftermath of everything that happened to us, the boarding schools and everything. They took everything away. Yeah. Took away our role as men. It's really sad because of where we're at today. I mean, we're making a comeback through culture and our way of life. And when I say way of life, that's our way of prayer. You know, we don't, I mean, a lot of people, you know, when they think of, they called us savages because we didn't pray the way they did. But we prayed. We all prayed to Creator. We all prayed to we call him Wakantika. He's the everything you see here. Wakantika is sacred. And that's who we pray to. We didn't have God for this one, God for that one, like everybody says. We all prayed to that Creator, every one of us, including you. If you know, if you're a Christian person, or even a Muslim, we all pray to the same one. We just had different. We have different what they call messengers. Jesus Christ was a messenger. Pate Sawi, she brought us at Chinupa. She was our messenger. Across the oceans, there's different people that Buddha, you know, all of them were different messengers. But today they focus on one person that all the other ones are wrong. And we were wrong. They say we were wrong for how we lived and how we prayed.
But still you pray.
Oh, yeah. We still pray. You know, we might pray in a different way. We don't use that Bible. We use that pipe, that Chinupa. Let's call it Chinupa. We use that to pray with. And so to...
I want to thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. I'm really happy to be on this because I think that story needs to be told, our story, what really happened. Like I said, it could go on and on with the story, and there's other stories out there from other people. I mean, this is just what I know. There's so much more that other people know. We'll never know what happened about those ones whose scalps were taken. There used to be bounty on our scalps. We'll never know what happened to them before their scalps were taken. I've often wondered that. What did they endure before their death? So, anyway, thank you for letting me be on the radio. And you know, you have a you know, I know it's your Christmas is almost over, but Merry Christmas, you know. It is, you know. I mean, yeah, and I, you know, I can't even be home right now. I'm here. I haven't been home for years now for this. You know, I don't follow that holiday, but it's still time to be with your family, and I haven't been there.
And good food.
Yes.
We certainly. Food. And there were a lot of families there this evening. A lot of great food.
And you're a good man. You know, thank you for again. You know,
thank you for
doing it. Okay. Okay. I'll see you again.
Thank you, Jim Hallam. And on our website, we're going to list the names of the 38 plus 2 that were hung December 26, 1862 in downtown Mankato, Minnesota, or in modern language, Mankato. Be listening for some follow-ups from other key people and writers from that ride. It's 30 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to KHOY Community Radio on 89.1 FM, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. On Friday Local Talk with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy, our steady hand at the controls. Hi, Susan Guiazda, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, Susan.
Yeah, what a good morning it is. It's Friday.
Yes, it is. And a lot of year-end activities, I'm sure. Do you have announcements?
I do have a couple of announcements to make. One of them being that earlier this year, we hosted the first Ames Repair Cafe at the Ames Public Library. And if you've been home for the holidays and you've happened to notice things have gotten broken, or you got new things and you were ready to discard those old things, just remember that the next Ames Repair Cafe will be Saturday, January 14th.
Oh, I love it. January 14th.
Yeah.
We need to mention
that. At the Ames Public Library. We'll have more details on our website. But again, if you went to the first Repair Cafe, you'd know that they fixed everything from small motors to small kitchen appliances to there was someone there with a sewing machine that could patch up your trousers or...
Oh, even doing mending?
Oh. Even doing mending. Can you believe it? And they're all volunteers, and there's no cost for the service. And I just think it's just such a fabulous idea.
It's fabulous. That is. Good.
Yeah, don't throw things away.
Good word for it.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. Put that on your calendar. It's not till the 14th of January, but as you're home, maybe you notice some things that could have a second life. Yeah. And then after they're fixed, you certainly can donate them. The whole goal is, of course, to get things out of the waste stream. We don't want stuff going into the garbage and then eventually into the landfill that doesn't need to be there. So so that's kind of just something to think about in the future. One of the things that we've been talking about this week, I've been mentioning that I walk a lot outside, and I've been pretty pleased as a frequent walker, as a dog walker in the mornings, that most of the paths have been fairly clear. But there are some that have gotten very icy. One of the people that focuses on snow and ice control at the City of Ames is Justin Clausen. He has had an extraordinarily busy week. I thought it might be good for him to come on this morning and talk a little bit about what his job is, what makes his job more difficult, and how we can all help him do his job better.
Susan, if I could interject one little comment. If there was a Nobel Prize for recycling, I would nominate Ames, Iowa, and all that you do at the recycling center.
Yeah, it's a great program.
It just really speaks so well to our community. And Repair Cafe is another strong cornerstone of that foundation of recycling.
Yes, thank you for that. The Resource Recovery Facility is a marvelous facility. We're lucky to have it, and we're looking for more and more ways to reduce, reuse, and recycle.
But I've kind of taken some of Justin's time. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
You've been a busy man.
Well, you know, the weather kind of dictates sometimes how much I need to be at work and how much sometimes I can have time away. But, you know, the past, right before the Christmas holidays, that was a busy time for us, that's for sure.
It was a different world a week ago.
Boy, it was. You know, I heard yesterday, the temperature yesterday versus the wind chill on, I believe it was Friday, there was a 100-degree difference in less than a week.
Oh,
so I think we all experienced that and know what that was like. Yeah. But, yeah, that blizzard that came in, it started really last
Thursday
Wednesday.
Night, kind of.
Yeah, it lasted through Saturday, and we had my staff in the Public Works Department, and we're supplemented by people from Parks and Recreation and others, that we worked 68 straight hours with trucks on the roads trying to keep things clear and things open.
Has that ever happened previously? I mean,
it has. Unfortunately, it has. So I did some research in advance of this event, and the longest one. So I've got pretty detailed records going back to 1988 and 2008 and 2009. There was a blizzard. We had 78 straight hours. So this one didn't quite top that, but it sure felt like it.
Yeah. Well, 68 continuous hours of operation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that takes up a lot of people's time, and a lot of, you know, people get tired. They work 16-hour shifts, So, you know, the crew will come in and work 16 hours and they'll take off, and the next crew will come in and work 16 hours, and we just kind of rotate there in, you know, in between. So it's long and strenuous, and, you know, I applaud those guys that, and gals that are out there that taking care of our streets and making sure that, you know, we could get emergency vehicles where they needed to go. We could get, you know, whatever we needed. And, you know, it was, I'm pretty proud of the work that we did and the success that we had, because it was under some pretty challenging conditions.
I was traveling up in Minnesota and kind of missed, but by the time I got back on Tuesday, I hadn't really noticed big mountains of snow. And you guys just expedited the movement of the drifts that I'm sure, you know, out in the country, the drifts were kind of an issue, but I'm sure you even had drifts here in town.
You know, we did, and that's one thing that I'm thankful for. We don't have the drifting that, say, the county or the Iowa DOT has to deal with in some of their locations, but yet we still have some. Mm-hmm. We have some rural sections of road that drift shut that we had to continually, we had plows on about a two-hour cycle time going back around to individual places, not only on the edges of town, but also some places in town where things will just funnel just right, and you'd plow it and you'd come back and it looked like you weren't even there less than 2 hours later.
Right.
And that was, like I said, nonstop with that wind going on, you know, Thursday into Friday, and even just briefly into Saturday morning when we kind of finished the cleanup. So,
well, how are we poised if there would be another event? We got a pretty good forecast, and I'm sure you're watching the forecast constantly. How does that work for getting the staff back out to, after putting in so many hours?
Well, thankfully, a couple things that, you know, we did have some holiday time there that some of the staff was able to take advantage of. Now, granted, we had another snow event on Monday and a Tuesday when staff was scheduled to be off. Excuse me, Sunday and a Monday. But they had Tuesday off. And then we're coming up with a weekend where, thankfully, we can at least get a chance to catch our breath. But some of the other things to think about that happen is our equipment needs maintenance. We have cutting bits on our plows and things like that need to be maintained. So, you know, the past couple of days, we've been working on that. We have piles of snow that end up get piled in the downtown area and also in circles and other locations that we need to haul those away to make room for the next snow event. Mother Nature's actually done us a little bit of a favor yesterday and today and through the weekend where we're getting some melting going on. So that's a nice reprieve. So that'll help. We won't have to haul as much snow. But that's one of the things that I think goes overlooked is that even our equipment needs some time to be repaired.
Oh, sure.
You know, this is difficult conditions it has to operate in. So we take that time to do that. And thankfully, with the weekend coming up, staff can get some time and take a deep breath, and then we'll get ready for the next one.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a couple minutes. Is there what message do we have? How did people do with their moving their vehicles and that sort of thing?
Well, that's a great segue, because one of the great things that we had going on during the blizzard event was a lot of people did move their cars. We ticket and towed very few, and we don't take any pleasure in doing that, don't want to do that, but we need to at times to keep efficient operations. So I want to thank everyone for moving their vehicles, even if you didn't have to. That helps. You can look at images from Buffalo, New York, where they asked people to move cars or not drive, and they got stuck there. We didn't have to deal with that, thankfully. But the other main thing that I really want to share with people, and Susan brought it up at the beginning, was moving snow off your sidewalks. That's something that goes overlooked at times. And I had people reach out to me during this blizzard event when it was going on. You know, we have wind chills of minus 30 below zero and the wind's still blowing. And they would ask, you know, do I have to get out and move my snow off my sidewalk in these really difficult conditions? And my response to them always was, you know, use some good judgment. There's no exemption to that. So I can't just say, nope, we're not moving snow off sidewalks. We don't have to enforce that. But there are a lot of people in our community that do use sidewalks as their primary mode of transportation. They are, you know, truly walking pedestrians wherever they
need
to go. And absolutely, they may need to get to a bus service or some other public transportation. So I encourage people that maybe in the worst of it, if you can make an effort, if you can do something to think about your neighbor that maybe needs that, that's what I'm looking for. And then when things start to abate and it gets better, go out and finish it. I think anybody would have a bit of common sense and say that's a reasonable way to do things. But, you know, people do forget, and it happens. It's the first kind of couple major snows here. So encourage people to continue to clear your sidewalks for those people that need it. Maybe you don't use it every day, but someone that you don't know might need it. So that's the biggest message that I'd like to carry forward.
Oh, thank you. And Mike Metz was curious on how the biofuel snowplows perform.
Outstanding. We've seen in the past, we had no issues with them as far as gelling or any fuel problems. I've seen those machines operate down to minus 14 degrees Fahrenheit. Thankfully, we don't have a lot of issues with them. Sometimes they don't switch over to biofuel because they do use a little bit of diesel right away because they do need to warm up. But eventually they get there, and I've not had to pull a plow off the road because it couldn't operate due to biofuel, and I'm very pleased with that so far.
Well, we're very pleased with your service to the Ames community. It was one heck of a storm, to say the least. And all the best in the new year, Justin.
Thank you, Pat. You too. We appreciate the opportunity.
We appreciate having you on so much. Thank you, Susan Guiazda, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames, and the Public Works Operation Manager, Justin Clausen. Have a good new year, folks.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Bit more of Round Dance. Let's welcome Carolyn Raffensperger, the Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. Well, Carolyn Raffensperger, welcome to Local Talk.
How are you, Pat?
I'm good today. How are you?
I'm okay. It's coming up on the end of the year, so it's one of those times of reflection.
Very much so. And I thought your voice would be so welcoming during this happy holiday season.
Well, thank you. And it's a joy to be here.
And you've been traveling?
I have been traveling, which gives rise to the thoughts that I'd like to share with our listeners today.
Mm-hmm.
So I drove into Illinois, where I grew up, and spent some time with my mother, who's in her 90s.
Oh,
and, my. Yeah. And she's still living on her own and has some health problems. And I went into Illinois to see if I could help my mom regain the health that she had even 2 months ago, and to just see if I could help her with her well-being.
My, wonderful. So beyond chicken soup.
Well, interesting that you mentioned chicken soup. So part of what had happened is she had a major surgery for cancer in June, and then all of the things that happen to someone because of surgery and because of chemotherapy and all the things that happen to someone,
right.
Her health was failing. And I know that you have friends who are ill right now as well.
Yeah, as do a lot of our listeners. And I thought about that when I said happy holidays. I realized that we were going to do the best face we could, but yet for many, many of our listeners, it's a rough patch, if you will.
It's a rough patch. And so I wanted to talk about healing. And I want to talk a little bit about what I learned from being with my mother. My father was a surgeon, and my mother a nurse, although she's also a musician, and probably better known for her music. And then thinking about what I saw driving across the landscape, I crossed into Illinois.
But Carolyn, was this the first Christmas since your father's passing?
It was. Mm-hmm. It was. And so, you know, changing the holidays and recognizing the changes in this year with my elderly parents. And what I wanted to say about driving across Dubuque and into Illinois, but especially in Iowa, coming home, was those beautiful drifts of snow were blanketed with black dirt. And what it said to me was the land is hurt. we have wounded this beautiful state of prairies and potholes and rivers and savannas. And so what I wanted to think about was what would happen if we treated our own bodies and the land together in a spirit of healing. Mm-hmm. What would that mean? And what struck me about my mother was that her diet had really disintegrated. She's nearly blind. And so she had pretty much stopped eating and lost a lot of weight. And rebuilding her diet so that her gut was happy and that she could regain her health, we started by treating her body as a living ecosystem, giving her foods that are living foods, like sauerkraut that's fermented and yogurt and things like that.
So you mentioned her gut, but you're really referring to that microflora of, well,
our guts, yeah. It's flora and fauna.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and so we are our walking communities. Our bodies are walking communities. And that gut bacteria, that whole living system, is what enables us to be healthy. And they help us digest our food. They help make vitamins and bioavailable. So we started by taking out lots of things and then building back in, giving her, in this case, some turkey soup, and building in these other living foods and good foods, dark green foods, dark red foods, slowly but surely. And within 48 hours, a lot of her symptoms had changed, gotten better. And she did not have a stomach ache for the first time in 2 months. She had lost 20 pounds in 8 weeks. And at 91, you can't afford to do that.
Why, right. We need our reserves, particularly in winters like this.
And the land. So many of the people in sustainable agriculture talk about healthy soil. And what I saw across our landscape with those beautiful drifts that carved by the wind, there's, you know, those beautiful dunes and swirls and swales, and then covered in black. It's going to change how fast they melt because they'll, you know, warm faster, and they're not on the fields anymore. We have destroyed that land. And so what I wanted to talk about was, what would healing be like if we treated ourselves and the earth with the kind of gentleness, with that spirit of healing? You know, Aldo Leopold said that healing is the capacity for self-renewal. And he was talking about the land, that if the land has the capacity, you know, if we give it what it needs, if we stop doing really horrible things to it, that it can recover. And how do we nudge that in the right direction? In many ways, the way we were nudging my mother's health in a gentle direction, not, you know, this is not something you can force, but it's treating it with a compassion and with the spirit of healing so that my mother's body could heal itself, giving her what she needed to recover. And I keep wondering, what would it be like if we did the same thing for the earth? So this is a time of year when we often think backwards and, you know, we get the lists of the best novels that were published this year or the best movies or the most interesting political stories. And it's also the time of looking forward. What are our resolutions? What do we want to commit to? What habits do we want to build? And what I want to do is commit to doing everything I can to aid the land and those around me, their bodies, as part of this ecosystem, as part of this beautiful world, to nudge it into the capacity for self-renewal, for healing.
Mm-hmm. And just to add, in my community of Milford Township, following the big wind of a week ago, there were drifts out in the fields that I had never seen before. it was interesting how the force of the wind was depositing snow and drifts. And along my road, things had changed, and there were some areas of typical drifting, which had been before, but other areas it was kind of new. But I took note that the black streaks, in fact, I even took some pictures, because it seemed as if the black on the white, and sometimes it was black would be patterned, and it's like we have topsoil to burn, or we have topsoil that we can just let blow away. And I think I read where it takes 500 years to accrue an inch of prairie soil.
I don't doubt that. And you know, one of the things that I'm trying to learn right now that's captured my imagination on some level is composting and making soil.
Yeah.
And it's astonishing to me how much, you know, the vegetable peelings and cardboard and paper and everything else I add to the compost actually vanishes,
yeah,
but it compresses, and it makes so much less than the volume that I had put into it.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine how long it takes to build that soil, which is the health of the land. It's the health of the trees. It's the health of the grasses. And it is the health of the rivers. So we're not just sending it into the ditches when it blows away.
Yeah.
We're sending it to New Orleans.
Ultimately.
To the Mississippi River.
Yeah, the combination of snow and dirt, and it's not funny, but I do call it snert.
Oh, yes. Yep. It's inventing words for the diseases of our civilization. Mm. Rene Dubos said that every civilization creates the conditions of its own diseases. And what we're creating is a condition for poor health for humans as well,
mm-hmm.
that our soils degraded leads to food that has less nutrition. The air being full of dirt is going to, it's not good for lungs. We're not meant to breathe that. And we're not meant to drink the remains, the chemicals, the fertilizers from industrial agriculture. And so if we heal the land, we are much more likely to have healthy bodies ourselves. And so I want to live in such a way, especially this coming year, where I am demonstrating that I'm a member of, plain member and citizen of the ecological community. Wendell Berry said, in a kind of parallel quote to Aldo Leopold's quote about health, that health is membership. And I want to live out as a good member of the ecological community. I want to treat this earth well, and I want to be treated well. And that means we have to do that together. We are in this together. And so the things that I did for my mother's diet, that's for one person. And yet the things that we do that are restoring the earth, the ecology, the rivers, the biodiversity, the soil, those things will pay dividends both laterally, you know, to our neighbors, to the north, south, east, and west, just as if your soil blows to your neighbors, who knows what the net gain and net loss is.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't do that, if we are able to tend the earth, if we are able to tend it well, then that membership is, we're living out that membership that results in health.
Is there anything else?
There are two things that I want to comment on.
Mm-hmm.
One is that as you think about New Year's resolutions, which is part of that corny culture that we belong to, there's a sweetness and a corniness to it, to make a resolution about something you will do for the earth, whether it's join an environmental organization and pitch in to help pass legislation or make sure that the city council makes good environmental decisions, or whether it's planting plants that pollinators and birds love, or whatever it is, find something to do that is a gift to the earth. And if you can make a regular practice out of it, so much the better. And I wanted to also say one thing about this year. Some indigenous cultures, especially in the north, have a way of keeping track of the years through something called a winter count, where they will draw a picture or keep track of something that was remarkable about the year. And my winter count this year and the last year, the year before, was about the big winds. And we should be paying attention now to what is driving those big winds, which is climate change, that we're going to have more of them, and that we're going to have to learn how to protect the Earth and each other from those big winds, but we're also going to have to learn how to prevent any more. Otherwise, our topsoil is going to blow away, the trees are going to blow down, and the suffering that we will see among the human community and the more than human community is dangerous. And so my winter count records this past big wind, where we did not have that much snow, and under other circumstances, we would have been okay. But we had a very strong wind with the snow. We've had two derechos in the last couple of years, and what that is telling me is to pay attention. The wind has its own story. It is carrying a lot on its back. And right now, it's part of the essential telling of what these last couple of years have been. The winds in Iowa are telling us something. Will we listen?
Well, I'll be listening for more of your environmental positions, messages, and you're quite an asset to KHOI Community Radio and as the director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. Carolyn Raffensperger, your holiday message resonates very well.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you so much. Hey, Carolyn's message today has me thinking cover crops to deal with all the snert. And her New Year's resolution, find something to do which is a gift to the earth.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Carolyn. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. And if you have an interest in joining the Local Talk team as a reporter, our welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas Avenue. So come join the Local Talk team by going to our website where we are streaming live at khoifm.org. And if interested in contributing to the Local Talk team, please check out the Ollie at iastate.edu website. Get signed up for our inaugural Learning to Be a Reporter for Community Radio. And please remember to support this nonprofit station financially when you go to the website and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community nonprofit media in the highest regard. At Community Radio, you're going to hear items and stories you're not going to hear anywhere else. Community Radio is unique that way. Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday summary of the news. And thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey. And thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering and all that you do here for Community Radio. Thanks to our guest, Jim Hallam, from the Dakota 38 Plus 2 Memorial Trail Ride, Justin Claussen, Public Works Operation Manager, and Susan Guiasta, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames, and Carolyn Raffensperger with the Science and Environmental Health Network. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. Have a good 2023, everyone. And I have been your other host, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Robert Tree Cody, Round Dance from the CD, White Buffalo. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now!, followed by Adagio at 9 a.m. Remember, you're the listener. What makes KHOI meaningful and possible? Thank you for listening. We'll see you again on the radio.
This is KHOI Story City, Ames.